At the beginning of 2000, a domestic accident caused a deep sadness in the Fitzhugh family. Christine suffered a fatal fall on the stairs of the family home. A police investigation soon uncovered dark secrets that the family had kept hidden for decades. This is the story of Christine Fitzhugh. Christine Pedersen Fitzhugh was born on September 18, 1947, in San Diego, California, USA. At the age of 16, she met Kenneth Carroll Fitzhugh Jr., who was 20 years old at the time. There is no information about them before they met, but it is known that they crossed paths in San Diego in 1964. They soon began a relationship and married 2 years later, in 1966. The marriage produced two children who were born in the 70s. Justin was the eldest son and John was the youngest. They lived in Palo Alto, California and were financially very stable. Kenneth was a successful realtor and Christine was a music teacher at a school. Christine loved what she did and she was competent and professional. The couple was very active in the community. They were well-liked and respected. The perfect family. On a Friday, May 5th, 2000, Kenneth left for work at around 11 in the morning. He headed towards Belmont, a 40-minute drive from Palo Alto, to evaluate a new client's land. Following this, he went to meet two friends, Galen Mason and Carol Pereno, to help them buy some materials for a birthday party the following night. During the middle of the afternoon, while Kenneth was still with them, an employee at the school where Christine worked called him asking if everything was okay. Christine had not arrived for the first afternoon class, and she had not contacted the school to alert them of her absence. They had called her cell phone and landline, but she had not answered. They needed to know if they should reschedule her classes for the rest of the day. Kenneth tried to call his wife, but she did not answer. He asked his friends to accompany him home to check if Christine was okay. Arriving at the scene, they found her car parked in front of the house. Kenneth went in to look for his wife, but was soon calling for help. He had found Christine lying at the foot of the basement stairs. One of his friends called emergency services.
Coming to Sabita Avenue. What's going on? Somebody has just fallen down the stairs. She fell down the stairs and hit her head. Is she still breathing? I don't think so.
Soon, help arrived at the scene, but Christine was pronounced dead. Kenneth believed that his wife had fallen down the stairs because of her slippery shoes, shoes that he had warned her not to wear. He spoke to the police and the scene investigation began. A receipt from a nearby coffee shop was found in Christine's pocket with the timestamp 12:20 p.m. As it was now late in the afternoon, they imagined that the accident had occurred a few hours previously, but the accident scene was a little strange. Her shoes had low, closed heels and they were found lying on opposite sides of her body. The left shoe was on her right side and the right shoe was near her left foot on the stairs. Her injuries would have caused blood loss, but traces of blood were only found next to her body. There was no blood on the stairs. Kenneth was taken to the police station to give a statement.
I must have told her six times to get rid of the black shoes, and then she bought some red ones just like them. And she'd get dressed and she'd say, how do I look? And I say, well, fine, except I wouldn't wear those damn black shoes. You're going to fall. And there they were on the stairs.
He acted unusually, speaking as if it were normal for his wife to be dead. When he spoke about his son, Justin, the police became suspicious.
Her older son graduates from college in a couple weeks. She wants to be there for that too. It's really a sad time.
You said her older son. Is he not your son?
No, he's our son.
When he talked about the position of the shoes again, he reacted forcefully, hitting the table.
Then I saw the black shoe, the goddamn black shoes!
The police felt that he was acting out. However, this was just an assumption. It was not proof, but it was enough for them to suspect that Kenneth knew more than what he was letting on. The autopsy report brought new information. The time of death was determined to be between 12:30 and 1:30 p.m. It was confirmed that there were several injuries to Christine's head, which were not compatible with a fall, but rather from blows from a heavy object. The bruises on her face were compatible with punch marks. There were also some defensive injuries indicating that she tried to protect her face from the attacks. Finally, it was confirmed that Christine's death was due to mechanical asphyxiation due to suffocation. In other words, it was not an accident, but rather murder. A subsequent analysis of the crime scene was carried out by forensic experts to confirm the findings of the autopsy report. Using luminol, they found that a lot of blood had been cleaned at the scene. The stains were present on the chairs, walls, and floor of the kitchen. Several sneaker footprints were found on the floor, as well as on the walls of the stairs and on the basement stairs themselves. In other words, someone had cleaned up the entire crime scene to make it look like an accident. But who? Why? They already suspected it was Kenneth, but without a motive or evidence, nothing could be done. The police contacted Robert Brown, a family friend who ended up revealing the Fitzhugh couple's secrets. At the end of the 60s, Kenneth met Robert, a lawyer at the time, when they both were working at an aerospace contracting company. Robert became very close to the couple. They used to have dinner and socialize together at weekends. The three even bought properties and shares as joint investments. Robert was godfather to Justin, the couple's first child. However, Robert was also a drug addict. As his problems escalated, the couple, in light of their friendship, decided to lend him the money for treatment at a rehabilitation center. Unfortunately, the help was not effective. Robert had his law license revoked due to his involvement in various criminal enterprises, including car theft. In the mid to late 70s, the couple decided to relocate to get away from their friend. But that was what was told to him. But Robert believed that the real reason for their move was the fact that Kenneth had discovered that Christine was having an extramarital relationship with him for over 6 years. In addition, Kenneth may have also discovered that Robert was Justin's real father. It seems that Kenneth had forgiven his wife, but to do so, they had to move away from Robert. However, this separation was a difficult thing to do because he, Justin's biological father, was already his own son's godfather.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem senso de humor tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca. Porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
5 months before her death, Christine called Robert to tell him that Justin was about to graduate from college and that she thought it was time for him to know the truth. She wished to talk to the boy before his independent life began. She could no longer bear to keep this secret for so many years. She also warned that she would talk to her husband because she wanted this to be a consensual decision. This was information which could bring an end to the mystery. To confirm the veracity of paternity, a DNA test was carried out. And yes, Robert Brown was Justin's biological father. It wasn't difficult to discover that the couple's financial life had been falling apart. Kenneth's annual income reports ranged from millions of dollars in previous decades to just a few thousand in recent years. His business was not going well. Many investments had been rescued or unwound over the years, and the couple were in debt. The police also confirmed that the version of events which stated that he left home at 11 a.m. and drove 40 minutes to Belmont to visit a client's land was a lie. Cell phone location records through communication antennas confirmed that he did not leave Palo Alto all day. A search warrant was issued for Kenneth's car. This had not been done before, as there had previously been no clues to identify him as a suspect. When analysing the car, they found a pair of sneakers with the same footprints from the crime scene, a shirt and a paper towel. The sneakers and shirt belonged to Kenneth. All three items were bloodstained. The blood samples were sent for laboratory analysis, and this confirmed that they all belonged to Christine. Called to testify again, Kenneth denied knowing about Christine's extramarital relationship and Justin's real paternity. Regarding the blood-stained materials found in his car, he confirmed that they were his wife's, because weeks before her death, she had injured her hand with a gardening tool. The items were in the car to be sent for professional cleaning, but he had forgotten to organise this. It transpired that in the expert report, no injuries were identified on Christine's hands. His excuses were of no avail. Just 2 weeks into the investigation, on May 19th, Kenneth was arrested on charges of murder. The police theorised the following. Kenneth knew of Christine's desire to tell her son about his true paternity. He was not happy about this. On May 5th, Christine went to a coffee shop close to their home at around 12:20 p.m. She bought a coffee and returned home. While eating and reading some work reports in the kitchen, Kenneth walked up to her and most likely started a fight about Justin's paternity. He attacked her, initially in the face and then struck her several times with a heavy object. He suffocated her, positioned her body in the basement, placed her shoes in strategic positions, cleaned the entire crime scene. He changed his clothes but mistakenly kept his shirt, sneakers and paper towel in the car, not realizing that the car would be routinely searched as it was at the scene of a domestic accident. He then went out to meet his friends to potentially construct an alibi for his whereabouts when Christine's death occurred. During the hearings, he maintained that he was innocent. His lawyers claimed that the house had been invaded by an unknown person and that it was not Kenneth who took his wife's life. But this version was not accepted, as investigations proved that there was no sign of an invasion of the property nor DNA at the scene of the crime of any person who was not a member of the family. There was significant evidence that pointed to him being solely responsible for the crime. Kenneth's final trial took place on August 2nd, 2001. The jury deliberated for 3 days and he was found guilty of manslaughter. It was believed that he had not intended to kill his wife. So, at age 58, Kenneth was sentenced to life in prison with the right to parole after 15 years. Kenneth was granted parole early in February 2012 at 68, 10.5 years after the start of his sentence, due to Parkinson's disease. Early parole may be granted to prisoners with serious or terminal illnesses. However, he was only on parole for a short time, passing away 8 months later on October 27, 2012, at the age of 69 due to complications from the disease. Little is currently known about his sons, Justin and John. Before Kenneth's trial, they appeared to lead a normal life and attended the first hearing accompanied by their fiancés. They did not attend the trial. Christine Fitzhugh, aged 52, lost her life simply for defending her son's right to know his father's true identity.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.